Welcome to episode 73 of the Clive Barker podcast. In this one, we talked about Boom Studios' Nightbreed comic. Welcome to episode 73 cast. We're Ryan and Jose. Hi.
Hey. Hi, guys.
So we'll start out with news. There's not a whole lot of news this time, so it'll go kind of quickly. But the movie Leviathan: The Story of Hellraiser and Hellbound Hellraiser 2 has got a T-shirt that you can buy.
Yeah, it looks really amazing. The artist that made the design for this T-shirt is the same artist that's been doing all the artwork for the Leviathan project. So
yeah,
it looks really nice.
And obviously, they're in fundraising mode. Because our next story is that they've started a Kickstarter to get the movie going.
So, yeah,
and I haven't checked it in a while to see where it's at, and I haven't contributed yet, but I plan to.
Well, right now they have pledged £1,226 of a 12,000-pound goal. With 32 days.
40 days to start with, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's going well. I mean, you know, obviously there's a lot of people who, try to pitch in at the last time when they realize, oh, the project really has a chance of becoming a reality. Yeah. So now I'm going to pitch in and help to get that final, whatever, $200
or something.
Yeah, people
should jump in right now. Was it 50 pounds where you can get a copy of the movie and you get a shout out on Twitter and Facebook and a 12x18 poster.
Yeah. And a copy of the movie on DVD when it's released.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think
that's what
that
I'm going to do, probably, is the 50 pounds at some point.
So let me see. The one that you actually get a screen credit will be the 100 pounds or more.
Okay.
It says here you'll get pledge 100 pounds or more, and you'll get a shout-out on Twitter, thanks on our website and Facebook page, a roll 12x18 poster of the final Leviathan DVD cover designed by legendary UK poster artist Graham Humphreys, and a copy of Leviathan on DVD when it's released, signed by the writers and producers, makeup artists Jeff Portis and Roy Puttifoot, and one of the Cenobites, either Barbie Wilde, Nicholas Vince, or Simon Benford, autographs only, not personalized.
Cool. It's funny though. I just can imagine sitting there watching the credits, trying to find your name. Like, have you seen one of the Lord of the Rings extended editions where they have like all the fan club members at the end, and it goes on for like 10-15 minutes of just names?
Yeah, Lord of the Rings stuff, and then there was like a Tolkien.com fan website credits, and then there was like this huge like four columns of names. But your name will actually just go on the documentary if you pledge 200 or more. It says right here that a thank you with your name featured on the documentary closing credits.
$70 or something like that in U.S. dollars.
$200 pounds?
No. It's the other way around. Oh yeah, I'm
no.
Doing it
you're
backwards.
Way off. It's 300. It's 338.90 U.S. dollars. That's the pound is.
Yeah, because I was just thinking 50 pounds is probably like $80.
Like 1 pound is worth $1.7.
So okay,
that's how you go.
Yeah.
Anyway, but still, I know it's a little costly, but you know someone's going to get that because someone wants to get their name on the
Lord of the Rings because the there won't be that many names on there. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, for example, right now the 200 backers, there's zero backers, and there's going to be limited 20.
Oh, well, there you go.
So,
not 15 minutes of four columns of names, like. Yeah.
Right. Or, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, this is a project worth supporting because these guys have done interviews with over 25 people who were involved with the Hellraiser 1 and 2 that were, you know, shot in Cricklewood and Pinewood. And it's just, you know, I mean, it's going to be the documentary that was missing for the major horror franchises of the 80s. I mean, you have, you know, the one for Freddy Krueger and, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street. You have a documentary that's like 4 hours for like Jason and, you know, Friday the 13th. You have a documentary of like 3 hours for some other like Halloween franchise. And you didn't have like a documentary that goes really in depth on the franchise of Hellraiser. And, you know, at least these guys will cover the best two movies of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So support these guys because they need some help to not only make this a reality but also make it a physical reality, because this way, you know, people are going to be able to get a copy of the movie, and that's awesome.
And I think that £12,000 is like, what, $18,000, $20,000? That seems pretty frugal. I mean, it's not like they're daydreaming or, you know, they're looking to make a huge amount of money on this. It seems like they did all this work already and they're trying to get enough money to finish to do the post-production. That's what it feels like.
Yeah. Well, you know, ultimately the completion of this documentary means that they really want to share this with every other fan out there. Otherwise they would be like, well, thank you. We had interviews with like 25 people. Now we get to watch these interviews whenever we want. So, and thanks, you know, good job. But no, they want to go on and make a huge 4-hour documentary and share with the fans and say, hey, you guys want to check out the interviews we did with these guys? Here it is. It's a documentary that, you know, it's just fandom. It's just love of the franchise. It's just love of Hellraiser right here.
Yeah, and this is a huge project. It's not like some kind of little thing that you would see on a Hellraiser DVD. It's like a 3-4 hour movie.
And still, they're producing it with an indie budget, you know, out of their own pockets. And they're just asking for a little help to make it a reality so everybody else that wants to can watch it. So, you know, it's a labor of love.
So, yeah, that was – I think that's it for the news. And I need to go grab my comic.
Yeah.
Because our main topic is the new Nightbreed comic that just came out by Boom Studios. So there's only one issue. We're probably going to spoil stuff because we're just talking about one short issue of this comic and kind of our overall impressions and our hopes and what we'd like to see, our impressions compared to the old Nightbreed comics and that kind of stuff. So I'm going to go grab. Yeah, I'm going to go grab that really quick.
Yeah. Alrighty.
Okay. So, is the art is by, is it Peter Kowalski?
Yeah. So Clive Barker's Nightbreed number one. It's been released by Boom Studios in the last week of May. So it's written by Mark Andreyko and with art by Piotr Kowalski. And also, if you want to go for it, I mean, it's colorist Juan Manuel Tumburus and letter Ed Dukeshire. Mm. So there's three covers, okay? There's three covers for this because Boom Studios is big into the whole alternate cover thing. So they have three covers. Cover A is by Riley Rosmo. Cover B is by an artist called Christopher Mitten. And cover C is a picture you may have seen out there. It's by Mike Mignola, who has created Hellboy and, you know, has a bunch of, like,
projects. And that's also on the Nightbreed Genesis, which is the first four issues of the old Nightbreed comic. That same cover is on there.
Exactly.
So this, I have the cover with the old man with the staff. I guess that's Lylesburg.
Yeah, that's the same cover I have. I have, I don't know what cover this is. It looks like maybe cover A, Riley. I think
that's the most common. It's the only one I could find. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's the only one my comic book store had. I mean, when I went there, they only – oops, sorry. Got a message. Live recording. But yeah, when I went there, it was the only one they had. So I picked up the last one. So I don't know. If you guys want to get a copy, go to your comic book store. Don't wait because this has been out for like, you know, 3 weeks now.
Yeah, you may end up having to special order it from Boom Studios or, you know, if you don't get it now. I've read where some people say
they're going to comic book store.
Yeah.
And then they'll forget about it.
Wait for a trade paperback, you know, of. But, you know, there's no guarantee that that's going to happen. You know, you never know when comic books are going to start and stop and how successful they'll be.
Well, sure. Yeah, I mean, yeah, for the first few issues, you know almost for sure that they're going to have a trade paperback edition. But, and, you know, Nightbreed is going to last for a long time. I mean, yeah, it's Nightbreed. I mean, you know, it's not a crazy new project, even though in some ways it is a crazy new project. But go get it because it's much more fun to have individual issues than having a trade paperback because you can choose your covers. I mean, and the trade paperback, you probably don't even see the covers inside. I mean, for each issue.
Yeah,
so maybe there'll be some covers in the end of the trade paperback, but you know what? That's never the same thing.
And I feel a little bit proud that we have this now. I mean, I think this is kind of exciting because Occupy Midian's sort of rekindled the love for Nightbreed, and Nightbreed has come back.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, Occupy Midian and all the people in Occupy Midian were a big part of that.
Yeah, absolutely. All 8,000 members of Occupy Midian, you know, hey, guys, we did it. And people who are also, you know, friendly to Nightbreed, like people from, you know, Fangoria, Rue Morgue magazine, Shock Till You Drop, Bloody Disgusting, you know, there's people who are Clive Barker fans, you know, you can see that in the websites, you know, you go and you see like, oh, let me see this review for like this movie, Clive Barker movie on Bloody Disgusting. And you go and you see it's done by the same guy that's going to do all the other Clive Barker movie reviews. So you know that there are particular critics who are friendly.
It's kind of neat how they've just been kind of waiting, you know, like Nix's followers, for something to come back.
Yeah.
Because they haven't forgotten his promise.
Hopefully they haven't slashed everyone's throat in the bullpen. But it's funny because, you know, let's face it, there's Clive Barker fans everywhere.
Yeah, for sure.
So
So this opens up with Lylesburg. So it kind of, when, as you start reading this, you're wondering, okay, what time period is this? Cause we saw Lylesburg get shot in the head and he opened the berserker cage and we assume that he died, but I guess we don't know that for sure.
But
he's talking about, basically about Nightbreed and what they've gone through in different parts, you know, different time periods.
Yeah, so for starters, you were bringing the beginning of the story. In the beginning of the story, we do see Lylesburg, and we're inside what appears to be Midian. And at the left-hand corner on the top of the page, it says, now. So this is probably going to be situated in kind of a prequel to the movie, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because this looks like Midian to me, and Lylesburg is still here.
That's
and it says
true.
Now,
I don't think anybody could go down inside of Midian the way it is after. Yeah.
It's easy to miss that. It's easy to miss where it says now. Because it's right
until you just pointed it out.
Yeah. So I'm like, okay, so interesting. I guess this is going to be jumping between periods, which is something they do after you go in for a few pages.
So he's telling basically two stories, which confused me a little bit, and I think it confused, and we'll get into that a little bit later, but I think it really confused some other people. So he's the first story we're in 1857, outside Lacombe, Louisiana.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And sure enough, it looks to me, I'm not an expert in American history because I'm not American, but it seems to me like it would be called a lynching.
Well, I don't. They may not be a lynching exactly. I think that they're escaped slaves. So they may not be, just for the economical reasons, they may not be, wanting to lynch them, but.
Sure. In 1857.
Well, actually,
okay.
1857 is kind of late for slavery, isn't it? Yeah, maybe you're right.
I don't know. I have no idea.
Yeah.
Mm. Anyway, it's a bunch of guys with torches chasing what appears to be a black couple. So something happened, and of course they're being chased, and they're running through the swamp. And it's always great to see great characters come back, and I think they really went the extra mile to do the reveal of Peliquin properly. Because first you see just a shape, like a body shape. Then you see like the eyes. Yeah. Then you see like the mouth. And then you see a little bit in the face in shadows, but you know what's coming. I mean, you know it's going to be Peliquin.
Well, and interesting. What's interesting here is what would be typical is that he would jump out and kill all those guys that are chasing them, but that's not what happens.
Hmm.
I mean, not exactly.
Yeah,
he
I guess you know.
And he bites the lady that's one of this couple that are just trying to escape with their lives.
Yeah, it gives me the idea that Peliquin was acting a little bit kind of like a werewolf, where he's just like on the prowl for something. And it turns out that the one prey that he catches is the same prey that's being hunted by another mob. So he kind of disappears a little bit, takes his chances.
Yeah, and her husband calls him a devil, which I guess you can't really blame him. And he swings a tree branch at Peliquin and... And so Peliquin punches him away, and then all this mob shows up.
Yeah, but although this seems like it's going to be one of those by the numbers sequences, it's not going to be a by the numbers sequence because they jump cut through different time periods in this comic book a few times. I don't know exactly why. I don't know what kind of relevancy with the story that. They show us first is going to have with the story that they show us after the next sequence
in this book. Yeah.
Yeah. So far, the only thing linking the two scenes is that it features two characters that are Nightbreed. So I'm guessing there's going to be some kind of plot or subplot going on here that's going to link the stories together.
Each of these two characters, and then maybe next time they'll show back. Well, I don't know. Peliquin's got a story. Well, there are stories for these that seem like they need to be finished. Yeah. So then it goes to Boston, Massachusetts, April 1945, and it opens with Harold, who is a politician. I think, is he a mayor?
Well, he's definitely a politician or someone who's running for some kind of like public office. But and so they jump from 1857 or something to 1945. Which should be like April 1945, which should be just at the end of the World War II. So I think that's when Hitler committed suicide, was sometime in April of 45, I think. I don't know. But I think it's a senator.
I think you're right. So he acts like, I can't go out drinking with you, with all you guys. I got to go home and get to work because I have to get up early. But what he actually does is goes to visit a brothel.
Yeah. So it's one of those, rich people, very discreet, brothel ran by a madam. And so she says, well, hey, good evening, Senator. What would you like? And so he's like going through it, and of course – if you were familiar with the Nightbreed Chronicles, which was that book with photography by Murray Close, you kind of knew what was coming. Because Clive Barker penned these little backstories for each of the characters. And I think that was the thing that was not present in during the production of Nightbreed, as we confirmed with several of the actors like Simon Bamford and Nicholas Fentz. Clive Barker didn't really have a very defined nature for each of the breed because they were mostly also designed by Image Animation, and then a lot of the non-essential, non-principal characters, they were pretty much just Image Animation coming up with these different, you know, designs and just putting them out there in the background.
It didn't seem like there was really time to go into the backstory for all the characters then. Yeah.
So it was really nice when this book came out and we realized that there were creatures in this book that we haven't even seen properly in the movie. There's that couple. That couple, I forgot their names. I don't have my Nightbreed Chronicles here. But there's a couple of farmers who were transformed by a meteorite.
They look like potatoes.
I never saw those. I never detected any trace of those in the movie. They're probably in the background of some scene out of focus somewhere. You know, and you got backstories for characters like that.
Yeah, it's
you know,
it's
that's
a
awesome.
Gorgeous
and then you have
every
cool characters.
Nightbreed fan should get it, although I hate to say that because now, because of Nightbreed fever, it's expensive on eBay.
It was always kind of expensive.
The last time I saw it was $15.
Well, actually, yeah, you're right. I'm thinking about the making of the film. That one's always expensive on Amazon. That one's always like – I've seen people trying to charge you like $140
the book. Yeah, probably because it's an import here.
Yeah, that too. I mean, even when I was living in Europe, I was lucky that I found – I had a kind of, you know, I wouldn't say mint, but very fine copy of the book that I bought from an import store called the Britannica store in Portugal. And so that one I always kept pretty much immaculate, I mean, apart from reading it. And I later got one version in the good old days, just before Occupy Midian started, or right at the beginning when Occupy Midian started, where I got myself a copy that I thought, well, I'll just get another copy that I can just carry around with me and, you know, like read wherever I want without worrying that it's going to break the spine or whatever. You know, get like an old beat up copy of it so that I don't have the feeling that I need to tiptoe when I'm using it.
That's pretty cool. I still need to get the making of Nightbreed.
Yeah,
I don't have that one.
Yeah, I found one for just a handful of pounds in the Amazon UK. And I was like, oh, that's great. You know, just like 3 or 4 pounds. And I immediately bought a copy. It was an X Library, but it came already wrapped in that kind of protective vinyl cover. Yeah. Oh, man. I wish you have to let me know where you get those things because I love them. I want
20 years ago, and I just still have a big stack of them. Yeah.
Right. I think we discussed this before on the podcast.
I'll see how many I have left. I might be able to send you some.
It's fine. It's okay. But I was just curious to know what would the modern, you know, the modern item.
Yeah,
where is it for sale?
Probably could find it. But I bought them at a bookstore that doesn't exist anymore.
So yeah, so we were mentioning these books because if you've read them, then you know what was coming for the. Shuna Sassy segment, and
this
spoiler.
And these ladies are all climbing all over, or all like hanging all over the senator guy, and she's like, no, the madam's like, no, you know that he's here for someone special, and we all, of course, we know who that's going to be. I mean, obviously, it's Shuna Sassy.
Yeah. And I'm not going to say it, but obviously, if you've read the Nightbreed Chronicles, you also know that senator is going to have some kind of thing happen to him. But you know, or maybe not. Maybe they decide to not go that way in the comic book, you know.
So then before he actually sees Shuna Sassy, then we're back again to the Peliquin and the 1857.
Louisiana. Okay.
So,
yeah. And I've Googled Lacombe, Louisiana. I Googled it when I was working on my review. Yeah, and I came across it. And I was just trying to determine if there was like actually like a population on Lacombe, Louisiana at this date or if it was just like orchards. But no, yeah, there were definitely people living there at the time. 1857. So yeah. But I tried to look up like slavery or stuff like that, and
so
came
these
up.
Guys,
so
it looks like they're standing around, sort of debating what to do with the guy, you know, that and the guy they were chasing, and then all of a sudden, his wife jumps out, and she's got pointy teeth and white eyes, and so she's
She says she's going to kill them for, like, you know, what we can imagine is, like,
so
hunting
them.
She
transformed a lot faster than Boone, yeah.
Than Boone, yeah. And one of the things they mentioned in the Nightbreed Chronicles for the backstory of Peliquin is that, like, in no other breed does the spirit of the Nightbreed, you know, the spirit of the tribes of the moon burn as bright as in the tribe of the Qualm, which is the tribe of Peliquin. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know how that's supposed to work, but definitely he did the same to her as he did to Boone. He bit her on the soft side of her neck, and apparently she just took a few minutes, a couple of minutes at best, to turn, which is weird.
It is weird, because Boone was, like, all night in the morgue before,
And I prefer to think that something like that would, like, change you slowly from the inside out. And it would take its time and not be like something that I bit you. Oh, okay, well, now
like
you're my thrall.
How the vampires change in From Dusk Till Dawn. They, like, turn their head back and turn it away, and they've got a different face.
Or kind of like he's doing to humans what vampires do to their vampire thralls, which is they can bring them back and hypnotize them and tell them to do their bidding.
Right, and Boone was
something.
Never but there was never even a hint that Boone had to do anything Peliquin said. After they got bitten, they really didn't even talk to each other.
Right, but the truth is that Boone also happened to be caught in a hail of bullets. We don't know what would have happened to Boone now that I think about it. We wouldn't have known what would have happened to Boone had he just escaped into the night and, you know,
maybe
ran away.
He
might have turned in a few minutes.
Because,
you know,
maybe,
I don't know.
Because he
maybe
died, maybe that slowed it down.
Yeah. The truth is the creative consultant for this issue is Ben Mears, who we've had on the podcast. And Ben Mears, of course, is working across the desk from Mark Miller at Seraphin. And he's also working on translating – not translating, but typing down, like – the edited version of the Scarlet Gospel. So obviously he's in touch with Clive. I'm sure Clive is, like, trickling down these ideas. And it's like, you know, make it so, like, you know, when Peliquin bites someone, it turns them in a matter of minutes. Because that's what I always wanted it to be.
Yeah.
You know, or something
like that. Well, and, you know, it's not like there aren't inconsistencies or difficult things to explain in Nightbreed anyway. So.
Yeah, that brings me to my next point. You see the big reveal of Peliquin where he's like in this one page shot.
He says, your god is dead.
And he has the tentacles on his head, of course, but they're set in a different pattern than other images I've seen for this comic book. It's just one stripe of tentacles in the middle of his head, while in the movie it was two stripes of tentacles coming from opposite sides of his, you know, on opposite sides of his head. So I don't know why they decided to go that way, but, you know, I guess
too. There was, like, really bright white in the movie on his tentacles. Yeah,
that's true. Yeah, that's a good catch right there. I think in this one, maybe to simplify the colorist work, they went for a more pinkish reddish color.
Yeah, so it perfectly matches the color of his face.
Yeah, the good news is he still wears the same style of shirts in 1857, the old Renaissance fair style shirt, I guess. And he doesn't like to bathe or worry too much about having blood on his T-shirt because there's blood all over his T-shirt.
Yeah,
that's gotta
stink. That he could just steal clothes from the people that he kills or whatever, but
yeah, maybe he digs them up. I don't know.
Yeah, or maybe he mangles everybody so badly that their clothes are bloody and he just has to wear them anyway.
That's a good point. So, so the posse finds Peliquin. There's a big reveal. And, of course, that's pretty cool. It's a pretty cool scene that shows how resilient Peliquin is. He practically gets shot, you know, point-blank range with, you know, a few times. But apparently, you know, He can handle bullets, like in the movie, I guess, because in the movie he gets shot with bullets. Well, we don't really see him get shot with bullets, but we see him get run over by a car. And if you can survive that and still walk away from it, then it's a pretty good bet you're pretty tough.
He seemed a little depressed after he got run over by the car.
Yeah, he's like, that car never called.
Yeah, so anyway, he took out a couple of guys, and then he got shot up, and then they left.
And then all of a sudden, the lady that he bit that was supposed to look so demonish and intimidating, and for some reason her teeth are all sharp now, she was saying, "I'm going to kill you all." But then all of a sudden, she's like very frightened and, you know, holding onto a tree.
Yeah, and she never did anything to any of them, because we'll find out later that they got her. Yeah, so.
Yeah.
So now we're back to the senator.
Yeah. And it's kind of weird how secretive Shunasesi's boudoir is, don't you think? It's like Indiana Jones. They have to go through a bunch of like fake book walls and fake tunnels.
They pull a book back and it goes click, and then the wall opens up. But everybody knows she's there.
Yeah.
They could have just put a door with a lock on it.
Yeah, and then it's like
into a cellar. They
go down into a cellar through like a spiraling staircase and stuff. It's so I like it. It's very moody. It really makes me feel like, oh wow, it's, you know, if you don't know about the Nightbreed Chronicles, I bet you're thinking, you know, wow, what's going to show up here? You know, it's going to be the secret. So, I think the secret, it's a nice surprise. Of course, it's going to be Shunasesi because we mentioned that.
Sort of in this page, in this last page of this section here. So, but I don't understand the mechanics of this. Why are people interested in her? Because it seems like it would be really easy to get yourself killed.
I think you're missing the point of why they think it's hot. I think that's what makes it hot. You know, it's the idea that you're touching something that, you know, not many people have touched and lived, you know. So if you touch and live, then you become one of the few who has, you know, survived the experience. And
I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, kind of like that. Yeah, because she's as lethal as Jacqueline, I guess.
Yeah, so, she's down there in sort of a gilded prison, I guess. We don't really,
I think, in my upcoming review of it, I do mention that there's kind of a duality between the backstories, Peliquin and Shunasesi. And I think the common thread that's going to bind these stories is going to be how they found their way to Midian. Because that's what Lyle's birth at the beginning, before he starts the flashback sequence.
That's a good point.
He says something like, "We have never been alone. Midian calls to all of her children, no matter where we are." And then it cuts to the Peliquin story. So I think there's going to be some kind of interaction between these two storylines. I have no idea why it's going to take so long.
Like 70 years.
Yeah, maybe it's going to be how Peliquin found his way to Midian and how Shuna found her way to Midian. And it doesn't have to intersect
maybe
with
not,
the two characters. So.
I read one comment from somebody that was like, "Oh, I just read the new Nightbreed comic, and apparently Peliquin is Shunasasi's father." And I thought, what? That's going to be stupid.
I didn't get that.
Then I read the comic and I'm like, this guy is way off. He thought that this black lady was Shunasasi. It's like they're different time periods really have to skim it
there's absolutely no even point where you might consider doing a leap of faith to link the two things together.
She's not even the same I mean, she's not even remotely close to the same kind of creature as Peliquin.
No, absolutely not. But I mean, like I said, I love the artwork. I do love the artwork, even though I may have some ideas about, you know, wondering why they chose to go with the Mohawk idea for Peliquin. But, you know, I'm not going to hold on to that. I'm not going to hold on to that because the comic version is amazing. The comic version is very well designed. I miss, like you said, the white part in the tentacles, the dreads. But I'm very happy with this. I'm very happy with Pelequin. You know, if this is what we got, maybe it's some other member of the tribe. Yeah, maybe it's not Pelequin. That just hit me right now.
It might not be Pelequin.
But he's never named.
That's a good point.
You know,
nobody ever
calls Pelequin. I wouldn't be surprised. But you know, no, it's obviously Pelequin. I'm just horsing around. But it could not be Pelequin. Yeah.
There is that possibility.
Yeah.
So we're back to the Pelequin story again now that they've sort of revealed that for anybody that knows Nightbreed, you can tell that that's Shuna Sassy because you see spikes on her hands and you can see like her kind of her the way her nose is and stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, also one of the points I was trying to make earlier and then I kind of got sidetracked is that when you mentioned that Shuna Sassy is in a gilded cage, yeah, that's kind of a counterpoint the ideas of freedom and captivity. And it's like Pelequin is like represents freedom, whereas in the wilderness, and he's absolutely unbound and unstoppable. And then you have and he's living like in a swamp, basically. And then you have Shuna Sassy, who's living in a very gilded cage where she's got perfume and, you know, incense and like soft sheets. And, you know, she's living in, you know, this fancy old house, although she's being exploited sexually. But so, there's that different counterpoint that is interesting.
Yeah, so we're back to the Pelequin story again, and he's reviving because he'd been shot up so much. And we see that the wife lady has been hung, so they lynched her, and her husband might have helped them. We don't really know. He didn't really seem to feel sorry for her at all. I mean, ever since she got bitten.
Yeah, because you know it's a very scary transformation that she does. So for someone from that time, but yeah, you're right. I mean, he does join the mob in hunting down Pelequin. So I don't know. Maybe they all went for gumbo afterwards.
Yeah. So Pelequin comes out of the water and cuts her down because she's stuck hanging there and she's not dying.
Yeah, I always thought that Pelequin, you know, likes to put himself on a moral high horse. He's like, I kill people and I just bite them and eat their flesh.
Oh, there he says.
But then when he sees he does. Oh, yes. But now you are beholden to Pelequin. But anyway, here he looks at the creature that's hung and says, please. And he says, curious that. As in, you know, damned flesh bags. Yeah. It's like, dude, you walk around the swamp and you kill and eat people. You know, on what moral high ground are you? I mean, I understand that he's shocked that, you know, oh, they hung her. Jeez, well, look at those humans. But it's like you're hunting people and eating them. You know, what kind of moral high horse can you put yourself on?
Yeah.
Anyway, so I'm looking forward to that story where these creatures will soon make their way to Midian. Obviously, I'm guessing Pelequin is going to be escaping from something or some kind of reputation or some kind of crime he did and he needs to hide. And I'm thinking that Shuna Sassy just wants to be free in a place where she's not in a gilded cage, but she's in a den of her own people, and she's going to be happy doing that. So I'm looking forward to that. Like you said, it comes straight from the source penned by Clive Barker himself. For this regular series, the structure of the story seems to be very solid and friendly to the established backstory of the breed. So let's see. I really want to see this continue. I mean, I like to buy previews catalogs, and I like to pay attention to stuff like previews. So I've seen like comic book covers for this comic book that go for like number two, number three, number four. And for number four, you're going to have, like, because they're going to have A and B covers. I don't know if they're going to have a C one because this was the number one, so it got three covers. But I've seen the it covers A and B for number four, and it's going to have a breed that some of you may remember. Yeah. It was called Chocolat, which was this lady that was covered in scales, and she was holding, like, a naked baby wrapped in a diaper. And, yeah, I mean, the backstory for her in Nightbreed Chronicles is just amazing. I want to know more about it because it's one of those backstories where Clive just hints at things and leaves your imagination to imagine what happened. So he just says that this lady was found with a nest of, like, five huge eggs on a nest of priest's clothes in, like, a mountain somewhere. And it's like one of the eggs cracked open and one of the babies started reciting the Lord's Prayer, you know, with all his might. And now he lives in the Vatican. And which we can only imagine Clive is hinting that this kid is like the second coming of Christ or something. And then she escaped with the rest of her kids off into Midian. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm wondering, what are they going to do? What are you going to do with this? Yeah. The story that I just said. I mean, that's the priest's clothes, a kid that starts reciting the Lord's Prayer when he's born and lives in the Vatican. Are you going to use that in the comic book, or are you going to come up with something different? I want to know. I mean, I don't.
They'd be like 10 or 15.
I don't mind
it, before we ever even, you know, start their story together.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to go that way because, you know, otherwise they would say, well, people with the Nightbreed Chronicles know what's going to come next in the comic book, but. They might just change things. I don't know. Some of these backstories that Clive wrote, they were more metaphysical than others. I mean, look at the one for Lylesburg. He, you know, he quotes like this guy who went into the giant's eye socket and said, you know, I go into the land of monsters or whatever. That's like so theatrical, so metaphysical. You don't even know what that's supposed to mean for Lylesburg's backstory, for example. So wherever they go with that, I don't know.
So now we're back to the senator, and he's gone down the stairs, and Shunasasi kind of is getting ready for him. This lady unlocks three locks on this door, which is kind of overkill, probably.
Yeah.
And then the last panel of the comic is we see Shunasasi kind of sprawled out on this bed.
Yeah, with you know. Cloth covering all her naughty bits except for the boobies, which, because it's a Boom Studios comic book, hey.
Yeah, that's so they don't, I guess they don't have to be they don't have to follow the same rating as like a Marvel.
You know, they can show red blood and they can show like things like this. Like, did you know that the Comic Book Authority forbade like panels that would feature like a character pointing his gun at an officer of the law and stuff like that? Yeah, that's why sometimes in some comic books they would have to show us a comic book panel with a guy pointing the gun and then another one with a policeman. So, but you know, it would be the next panel on the page, so the gun would even be pointing away from the cop. I mean, it was just crazy. They would do it anyway.
Well, so that was the end of this one. It's kind—I mean, it's really kind of a teaser in a way, and it's really hard to make a good. I mean, you did a review of it, so it'll be—you know—go to that. People should go to our ClivebarkerCast.com to read your review, which should be up by the time we post this.
Probably even before. I mean, I'm going to try to put this up tomorrow or something. Which we're recording on Thursday, so I'm saying like probably Friday tomorrow or something. So I did it. It's not a huge review, but you know, I've used some of it to base my my review of it in this podcast episode. So I really enjoyed one of the things that I really enjoyed in the artwork as well from Piotr Kowalski was that he has these really elaborate backgrounds. You know, I think that sometimes in modern comic books they don't even pay any attention to the backgrounds anymore. It's more like very stylized backgrounds or whatever. And this guy actually, he does like frame every single panel properly in a way that, you know, absolutely the perspective of each of these panels is amazing. It's just perfect. So I think that really adds to the immersion into the story.
Yeah, I agree.
And so the
cover art, you know, was by Peter Kowalski again.
No, I don't think so. I think this cover art, Rosmo. If you have cover A, it's from Riley Rosmo. Yeah.
Right.
So I'm really looking forward to see what comes out of this. I mean, the only thing, if I can complain about anything, is that the writers, and I mean this in a good way. I don't want Mark and Draco to get mad at me, but it's like the writers are starting to narrow down more and more the time frame of what happens on every single comic book. Because, you know, I mean, if it's not because sometimes, like in some Hellraiser comics, which has happened, there's very little dialogue, but there's there's a lot of one-page splashes or two-page splashes.
Makes it read really fast.
Yeah. And this one, you kind of read it really fast, but it's like really intense for a bit. But it's still just a little fraction of the story, and we know that's just a tiny little fraction, because it's like basically the senator, all he does is say to his friends, hey, bye, catch you tomorrow, and then he gets in his car. Next panel, he's going into this brothel, he's going down the stairs, and the lady opens the door.
That's
20 minutes?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the only thing. It's like it's so intense. It's so rich and packed, and you know, there's so much going on in each panel. And the artwork is so amazing, and the writing is also very, very cinematic. But then you get that thing like, oh, I got to, you know, continue the story next month. Which is, I think, why some people take the approach of buying the trade edition. Because that way you can just buy it and read the whole thing. Or read at least a good chunk of the story at a time. So, that's the only complaint about buying monthly comics. Is that you have to wait another month to continue the story.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, so I guess the jury's still out. It's hard to give this a grade or like a, I mean, did you put a review? Are you going to put a review score on your review?
Not really, but I would say if I had to grade this comic book, I would grade it very, very highly. I would grade it like For number one, I think this is really interesting. It introduces very interesting characters. It provides them with very, you know, visual rich backstories. And you know, the coloring is amazing in this comic book. I mean, just look at the colors. Don't get fooled by the cover if it's cover A, because cover A is more like sepia tone and white. But the inside of the comic book is just so colorful. Every single page is so vibrating. I would give it a very high mark, like in the 90s, you know, 90%, you know. I'm hooked, you know. Bring me more of these Boom Studio comic books. I want more Nightbreed right now.
It seems like if they can follow one clear stream of story arc and not, you know, change writers all the time and, you know, different people abandoning different things and starting up new stories – because the old Marvel comics suffered from that a little bit. The old Nightbreed comic did. And Nicholas Vince was pulling it all back together and creating a really interesting storyline. But then it ended.
Yeah. 25, I think. That was a 25 run, I think. So, and at least they still got to put some of the ideas that he had for that on, like, newspaper clippings in the very last pages. They kind of like try to give you an idea of what would happen. I don't know. But so I think that this is probably going to be as successful as Hellraiser comics have been in the Boom Studios, which is pretty successful. Next Testament, also very successful. So everything that Clive Barker has put out has been selling very, very
well. They should do a comic book of Harry D'Amore versus the Gulfs. That would be
awesome. I would love to see that. That's an idea for Clive Barker. I don't know what kind of like deal he did selling the script or something, but I would love to see a comic book version of the Harry D'Amore prequel that was spoiled by that one dude in Fantasia number 8 or something. What was that name? What was the name of that sequel? No. It wasn't Vipex. Vipex was another thing.
I can't remember.
But I forgot the name for that. It was some really complicated, elaborate title. Never mind.
Finish up the story, you know, with Everville, where they started out with Great and Secret Show. Yeah.
Oh, right, right. Yeah. Well, they could definitely link it very well. I mean, it's completely possible. Yeah. I mean, Clive Barker did it.
That was a great comic book.
Yeah, I don't know. They would have to get the same artist, though, you know, for sake of
continuity. Well, IDW comics look pretty similar to each other. They all have that kind of glossy, shiny look to the characters. Yeah.
I mean, do you remember the comic books of our childhood? They were like newsprint paper, and it was matrix dot printing.
Yeah,
well, not matrix dot, but it was dot printing, which was just made with like a very narrow palette of color, as they would just put dots in it. And, I mean, gosh, look at these comic books now. They're so shiny and so amazing. Yeah, they're, like, computer-colored and stuff like that. That's amazing.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think about that sometimes, too. I mean, when like, Image started doing, like, you know, all those people split off of Marvel and started Image.
I remember. I bought a lot of Image. I bought a lot of number ones. I got the run of Spawn all the way up to like number 150 or
something. They don't have ads every other page, and they've got all these glossy pages and all this color and
even though it was still the same dull off-white paper from Marvel, this was better grade off-white paper.
Yeah.
In the beginning, and then it got glossy. Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they have the computer, you know, the computer color separations and stuff. That was amazing.
Yeah.
That really revolutionized comic books in terms of coloring.
I'm definitely
the 90s.
Keep buying these. I want to see where it goes.
Oh yeah.
We'll see if my pull list thing at the comic shop is successful or not.
Dude, I mean, I don't have any issues. Mine, even Sin, in the form of putting extra stuff in my pull. I mean, I've discovered things like spin-off from regular show comic books from Boom or whatever. And it's like they put the spin-off in my comic book file. I was like, oh, this also is coming out? Oh, great. I'm going to get it too. But if you go on comicbookresources.com, there is an article that we'll add to the show notes of Mark Andreyko shines light on Clive Barker's Nightbreed, which is an interview that he did for TJ Deitch. So, in this interview, he claims that he's been bugging people about Nightbreed for 3 years. So he's wanting to be in this project for like 3 years. He's a fan. He's a total fan. So they ask him, what was it about Cabal that drew you in when you first read it? And he says, monsters, monsters, monsters. You know, the novel creates such an elaborate world with so much history and so many characters. I feel like a kid in a candy store. I've been waiting for this opportunity for 25 years. I feel like a kid who's been asked to the adult table at Thanksgiving for the first time. So he's definitely very enthusiastic about his writing of his comic book. And I think he's doing an excellent work.
Yeah, me too. All right.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we've kind of come to the end.
Yeah, this was a shorter episode, but I hope you enjoyed it.
We'll keep following this and as it develops and kind of saying our opinion about it.
It's wonderful to see the rekindling of Nightbreed, and knowing that we played a little part in it, as every other fan who is buying these comics and, you know, is going to buy the upcoming director's cut of Nightbreed in October of this year. So it just warms the heart, you know, to see other stuff, other creative stuff come out of this, you know, what we thought to be a mummified body of the Nightbreed. And it's like just sprouting new life.
And, there's going to be, I think, some surprises with the director's cut of Nightbreed. So, you know, so can't wait for that. Yeah.
Stay tuned.
So I've just edited this, and it sounds weird, like the audio was mixed funny, because it sounds like Jose and I were interrupting each other all the time, and I don't remember it sounding quite like that in person. So anyway, bandwidth for this episode was provided by Kip Jankowski.
You can reach us on the web at www.clivebarkercast.com. Leave us a review on iTunes. We're on Podomatic, Xbox Music Store, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, Double Twist, BlackBerry, and Pocket Cast. Like our page on Facebook and join the Occupy Midian group. On Twitter, we're at BarkerCast and at Occupy Midian. The forum is www.clivebarkerfans.com/forum. Opening theme by Colin Lacativa.